It's a historic tornado, we think. The Enderlin tornado is upgraded to an EF5. Not everybody is convinced, however. President Trump is rumored to be ready to roll out a new plan to soybean farmers, maybe just in the nick of time. And even though police exit interviews look pretty good in the city of Fargo, it may not be spreading through the entire city personnel ranks. Good afternoon, my friend. Steve Hallstrom here with you for the Steve Hallstrom Show on this Monday afternoon. What a beautiful day it is. Temperatures much more like we are supposed to be getting this time of year. It has been a brisk but beautiful day. This is, when I think the beautiful fall days, I certainly think of these. I don't think of 88 and sunny like what we had last week. It looks like we might have seen the last of those days. But man, what a beautiful day it is today. I've got to say that the Canadian wildfire smoke, remember that used to be the deal that we were talking about all summer. It's like, come on now, can't we have a really nice day here without having all the problems going on with smoke out there? And today is a very average day. Average high for this day, 62. Where are we at right now? 62. Wind out of the west at 14, so it's a little breezy, but not bad, all things considered. I have found myself at different times throughout the course of this day saying to myself, we were just one day off. Just one day off. Yesterday was the running of the Twin Cities Marathon, which yours truly participated in. And throughout the course of the entire course of last week, every time I looked at the forecast for Sunday in Minneapolis, it got warmer and warmer and warmer for Sunday morning. And we went off, it was about 70 degrees. You'd love it to be low 50s, maybe mid 50s. Average low is 40, so you'd take that. But if you can at least get it down into the 50s, you're okay. 70 is way too warm for running that far, and if you're trying to chase a personal best of some kind, which I was, you're going to go hard, and you're going to struggle to slow yourself down even if the temperatures are a little too warm. Well, it was a little too warm yesterday. It was about 76 at the finish, and it was a warm day. I was able to get a personal best, and so I'm very excited about that. Did all the hydration and eating all the goo along the way, stuff like that, that gives you a fairly clear head through most of it, and it went okay. But I will say there were more people that were attended to for medical situations on the course than what I remembered really ever seeing before. This is the warmest marathon that I have ever been part of at the start, and I knew there were going to be some people that maybe they didn't train as hard as they had hoped to, or just went out too hard or whatever, that might really feel it. It was warm. It wasn't hot. And we trained during the summer, so it's really not all that bad. But that 26 miles when you're going that far at the, you know, your sort of pace that you're racing at, for whatever your race, whatever racing means to you, it's a stressful deal, certainly in the last 5-10 miles or so. But went good. I got top 30 in my age group, so I'm excited about that. I am a late arrival to the marathon scene. I didn't do my first one until I was 45. And so this was number 12 for me this year. And have been very thankful. The good Lord has been kind to me with knees and hips and all that stuff. I'm still able to do this and try to keep moving my time down. I might have mentioned this one time earlier, but I am on a three-year plan to qualify for the Boston Marathon. And when you turn 60, which will be me in 3 years, 3:50 is the qualifying time. And I'm at 3, after yesterday, 3:55. It was 3:55 and 30 seconds. And the year before, I was at 3:59.12, first time I'd broken 4 hours, so excited to do that. And if I can take 4 minutes or so off my time the next couple of years, then I may be in line to give it a shot and qualify for the Great American Race, which would be sort of a bucket lister for me. So I kept all day long I kept saying, oh my gosh, we were just one day off. Tracy and I left the cities this morning and we went outside and looked at each other and said, oh my gosh, we could have had this weather. Although for the fans, it was perfect. It really was. It was windy though. I know it was windy here. It was windy down there too. That wind stood me straight up a couple of times, but you just keep going through it. You do what you got to do. So glad to be back in the chair here. Moving a little slow today, but pretty good. All things considered, nothing hurts. Everything's just a little weary. We have a lot of bases to cover on the program today. Lots to do. We are going to bring you results of a new survey that indicates maybe Americans are not listening to Chuck Schumer after all. Doesn't seem like people are overwhelmingly blaming Donald Trump for the government shutdown, which I don't think they should be. So maybe people are really paying attention. Julie Fedorchuk will be with us at 4:40 today. Her chamber has done its job. Now they just kind of wait to see what happens in the Senate, but it looks like it might be a little while. The Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library is drawing some suspicions. They're tapping into a credit line, but I don't think something nefarious is going on here. We'll talk about that today. Dean Wysocki is going to be here, our chief meteorologist, at 5:20 today. There is a story out there making headlines that the Enderlin tornado has been upgraded now, well after the fact. But some new information, storm damage and things like that, has led the Grand Forks National Weather Service to ratchet up the rating to an EF5. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. Dean says there's not necessarily a consensus in the meteorology community about this. I don't know that Dean is expressing a lot of doubt himself, but we're going to talk to him about what he's hearing some people say from the weather people in the world that are not so sure about that. So, and why anybody would care. I mean, what does it matter? Carson Wentz, we're going to talk about Carson before the day is done, led the Minnesota Vikings to a come-from-behind win yesterday in London. And listening to the coach talk after the game, I'm not so sure that Carson's going anywhere. So we'll do that here. And before we finish up, another West Fargo business has asked for a variance to basically take out a median so they can make a left turn into the parking lot of the business. It's not Shea West, but it sure sounds like that. And at least one city commissioner is going, well, why are we making such a big deal about it with Shea West? We're going to let these other guys do it. So we'll talk about that, too. So lots to cover and a few other things as well here on the program today. Coming to you live from the Drive with Vision Studio, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. Buy your next vehicle at Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. They do a great job down there. Lots of good places where you can buy a car, but they make buying a car easy. Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. We have got a lot in the 4 o'clock wrap today, so let's hustle along here with that. We'll start with the almanac for today. October 6, 2025, average high 62, average low 40, record high 90 in 1993, record low 19 in 2001. Sunrise this morning at 7:33, sunset at 6:56. Yes, before 7 o'clock. We'll lose 3 minutes and 17 seconds of daylight today. In the markets today, a mixed day on Wall Street. The Dow was off 63 points. S&P 500 up 24, and the NASDAQ was up 161. WTI crude oil today up 84 cents at 61.72. And gold today up $75 an ounce at $3,984. Going to have $4,000 gold here pretty soon. Silver up 43 cents at $48.40. We're going to have $50 silver pretty soon as well. And Bitcoin today, a new record high, 125,107. As we've been telling you, people now are saying that people are taking flight from stocks and the risky things to put it in Bitcoin. The safe haven of Bitcoin. Crazy how times are changing right before our very eyes. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas, $3.13 nationwide today. That's down 1 cent from yesterday. In North Dakota, our average price is $2.87. Minnesota, $2.90. South Dakota, $2.85. In the news today, well, remember last week we told you that exit interviews from the Fargo Police Department looked pretty darn good. Not a whole lot of comments or concerns about administration or leadership. The people that were leaving just because they wanted a new opportunity or maybe got a better paycheck somewhere else. Well, Valley News Live has continued its exit interview investigation. And the story I'm reading today on valleynewslive.com says exit interviews from multiple Fargo City departments reveal a troubling pattern of employee complaints, with the communications department drawing the harshest criticism before its top leader stepped down in August. That we knew. Employees there in that department described management as intense, rude, demeaning, and manipulative. Across city departments, not all departments face the same criticism. Exit interviews from other areas, including Fargo Fire, were largely positive, though nearly all of them cited pay as the primary reason there. So you got the communications department, kind of the one where it's looked bad. The others, maybe a little bit better, I guess would be the bottom line there. The Associated Press reports President Trump is planning a significant aid package to U.S. soybean farmers to help them survive China's boycott of American beans in response to his trade war. President says he's still seeking a soybean deal with Beijing, but farmers are worried that time is quickly running out to be able to sell any of this year's crop to what has traditionally been their biggest customer. So Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, said today on CNBC, the public could expect news of, quote, substantial support for our farmers, especially the soybean farmers, as soon as Tuesday. That'd be tomorrow. WDAY Radio, Dina Wysocki, reports that the June 20th tornado to hit Enderlin has now been upgraded to an EF5 with peak winds exceeding 210 miles an hour, the first EF5 to strike the United States in 12 years, more than a decade since the Moore, Oklahoma tornado, the first EF5 in North Dakota since 1957. Max width of the tornado just over a mile wide. Valley News Live reports that a man was arrested Friday morning for allegedly making death threats while holding knives at a local grocery store. It happened at the Cashwise store at 33rd Street South and 14th Avenue in Fargo, where a Fargo man made threatening statements like, I'm going to murder you and I'm going to murder people, while holding knives in his hands. Officials found Zachary Barry Copang, hyphenated last name, inside the store and detained him. During a pat-down search, police discovered large knives concealed in his pockets. This happened at 9:52 on a Friday morning at the Cashwise store. They walk among us, friends. They walk among us. WDAY Radio reports that West Fargo police responded on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. A three-vehicle crash. One vehicle did not have its lights on, ran a red light, and collided with a second vehicle. The vehicle that did not have its lights on has had the report forwarded to the city prosecutor's office for consideration of charges. Again, another like 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, not like 3 in the morning. Weird things happening all times of the day. Star Tribune reports that Illinois state leaders went to court this morning to stop President Trump from sending National Guard troops to Chicago. The legal challenge came just hours after a judge blocked the Guard's deployment in Portland, Oregon. These cities, they are so tied up against Donald Trump that, yeah, we don't want safe cities. If Donald Trump wants safe cities, we don't want anything to do with it. So Portland and Chicago now fighting the fight. So it was thought that was interesting. The CDC has stopped recommending COVID-19 shots for all, leaving the decisions to patients. The CDC has adopted recommendations by a new group of advisors, stopped recommending the shots for anyone whatsoever. The government health agency today announced that it adopted recommendations made last month by advisors chosen by U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Before this year, health experts at the CDC recommended annual COVID-19 boosters for all Americans aged 6 months and older to update protection against the coronavirus as it continues to evolve. And those are some of the stories making headlines here on this Monday afternoon. We call it the 4 o'clock wrap. And when we come back, we're going to call it a check with our good friend Cindy from Travel Travel. And then maybe Americans aren't listening to Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries. After all, new poll results indicate the people of America are not blaming Donald Trump for the government shutdown. Talk about that when we come back.
Well, that chill in the air today is just a sign of things to come.
That's right, my friend. By the end of the month, our temperatures will be quite a bit colder than they are right now. By the end of the month, did you know that the average high is only 47? Yeah, after the 80s that we had in the 90s, 47 is going to be a bit of a wake-up call. Just think about what it's going to feel like in January. Well, I know someone that can give you a great idea to get away and beat the cold when it comes to January. Betty is with us today from Travel Group, and she's got a great idea for us to get away and warm up those chilly bones in the middle of winter. Hi,
no
Betty. How are
doubt.
You?
Yeah, I'm doing wonderful. And this also gives you a break right after the relatively for the holidays. So that's kind of nice, too.
Absolutely. Well, tell us about it. Where are we going and how much is it going to cost?
We are going to Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. And this is going to be air from Minneapolis, January 10th to the 17th for $15.15 per person. For round trip transfers, airfare, accommodations, you got it all.
So just $1,500 a person and for an entire week down there in the Dominican
Correct.
Republic. What about the Dominican Republic it keeps bringing people back year after year? What's so special
you
about
know,
that part of the world?
They say people like the food is what I've heard from some of my guests. They said that some of the best food they've had. And everybody likes the white sandy beaches, you know, so that's always a good thing. Doesn't
yes.
that sound good right now?
It sounds great, and it's still very nice here, but that sounds fantastic. And great pictures, right? You can show off to all your friends where you're at with the white
Correct.
Sandy beaches. That sounds great. Betty,
Correct.
If people want to find out more about this deal, how do they get in touch with you?
They give us a call at 701-492-5000. Or they can look at the website for some other information if they want to at TTravel.com. So TTravel.com.
TTravel.com. Simple as that. Thank you very much, Betty.
Yep.
Appreciate the ideas today. You take care.
Thank you.
All Have right. Thanks
afternoon.
So much. You bet.
Bye.
Bye now. $3,000 for a couple. That's not bad for a whole week down there. Accommodations, a flight, all that good stuff. And, boy, that's you know what's fun about those trips is you put them on the calendar, and it just makes the whole month before you go a lot better, especially those winter trips when you're dealing with the cold temps. Just something to look forward to. Just kind of gets you through those tougher days before you go. All right, 428, Steve Ahlstrom Show. I want to talk for a minute here about some polling that was done about the government shutdown. Who is responsible for the government shutdown? Who is at fault? Well, the people from Harris Polls, which is, I think they enjoy a pretty good reputation, did a survey of Americans here just a couple of days ago. Is the government shutdown making you vote more in the midterms for Republicans or Democrats? Republicans win this one, 36 to 34. So it's a fairly close split, right? And then about another third of people, the other 30%, said that they weren't sure, which is an honest answer. But aren't you feeling that way, that you're hearing more and more about, well, it's the Democrats or it's the Republicans, it's Donald Trump who is, you know, responsible for all these things? So obviously it's Trump. The numbers should be much higher toward Republicans in this case, because the Democrats, if you're just talking about the question of who is shutting down the government, well, this is legislation that went through in July, and certainly people can have second thoughts or want to take another swing at the pinata if they want to, but this is the same exact thing that's in place right now. And the Republicans are like, let's just keep this going. We've got in another 6 weeks, we'll have to do this again, by the way. So let's just keep things in place. Well, no, the Democrats are going to fight for the things they want. And it generally centers around Medicaid for illegals. And they don't doubt, they don't argue with that. But they say, this is what we are fighting for. So they are shutting the government down over health care benefits that you and I pay for people who are here illegally. You just got to work really hard to convince yourself that that's a smart plan and that that makes sense. But this is how things are in 2025. That number should be much higher to make you think, why am I voting for people that bring the country to its knees for no good reason whatsoever. Thought that was interesting. I'd pass that along to you here today. It is 4:30 on the Steve Alstrom Show. We got a check of news and weather, and then after that, Congresswoman Julie Fedorchuk will be with us. Her chamber, they've done their job. Now we got to wait for the Senate, but it might be a while, as we've been talking about. First, though, a check of news. Coming to you live from the Drive with Vision Studios, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. 15 minutes to buy a car, that's all it takes. Hey, if you or someone you know is looking for an apartment, check out Cornerstone Rentals in Fargo. A lot of folks live there long-term, but it's also great if you just need a place while house hunting. Washer and dryer hookups, pet-friendly units, plenty of space, and rent is under $1,000. They are family-owned at Cornerstone Rentals. The owners live right here, and there's an on-site manager. If you call them, even at midnight, you actually get a real person. Repairs get done right, and tenants really feel like part of the community. Cornerstone Rentals has rental properties around the FM area. One of their popular spots has 6 open apartments just off Veterans and 13th Avenue South, a block south of Menards. These specific units will go fast. Visit CornerstoneRentalsMGT.com. CornerstoneRentalsMGT.com. I saw that President Trump was behind some glass again yesterday as he celebrated. I think I saw that it was the 250th birthday of the Navy. So the Navy 250 years old, and he was in Norfolk, Virginia yesterday talking to the, what do they call them, the midshipmen? The sailors, I guess? Anyway, the folks at the Naval Academy. And they loved it. They loved that he was here. But it's another one of these situations where you saw the president and the first lady behind glass, which has been a change. I guess who can blame him, though, right? 2 assassination attempts and what happened with Charlie Kirk. So makes sense. Makes sense indeed. All right. It is time for us to go to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line because we are pleased to be joined right now by North Dakota's lone congressional representative, Miss Julie Fedorchuk, always kind enough to give us a few minutes once a month for a chat here on the Steve Alstrom Show. Hi, Julie. How are you?
I'm great, Steve. Thanks for the invitation to be here with you.
Always good to visit with you. Yeah. So right now, what do things feel like out there? And first of all, I should ask, are you in D.C. right now? My guess is yes, but I don't know for sure.
Actually, Steve, I'm in Bismarck.
Oh, you are.
I was in D.C. last week, hoping that the shutdown would come to a quick close and we'd get back to work, but it didn't happen. And then they sent us home for this week for district work, so I came home and have been having some great meetings here to try to keep advancing solutions on stuff in agriculture, healthcare, et cetera. So
yeah.
I'm back in North Dakota.
What does it feel like out there in D.C.? You were there for a couple of days after the shutdown began. What's it feel like out there when the government is under a shutdown? You've got some people not reporting for work. Others that are essential are reporting for work and doing what they have to do while not getting paid right now. What is the feeling out there? What's that like?
Well, my whole office is still very busy. My entire team is still working except for the interns. We let them go for the time being. So we're hard at work trying to make progress on getting additional bill sponsors and talking to the committee about advancing bills and, you know, working through some of the healthcare issues and talking with constituents at home about what they want to see in some of these solutions long term. So we're real busy. But the halls of Congress are obviously very quiet. It's very quiet. And I'd say it's just frustrating. I join my fellow North Dakotans in being frustrated that the government's shut down. It's pointless. I voted to extend the clean continuing resolution to keep the government open. And all the Republicans did as well. And I just wish that the Democrats would have seen the light in the Senate and still hope. Like, I think as we speak, the Senator Thune is bringing the Democrats and Republicans of the Senate together for another vote on this measure. And I hope that today's a day that we'll get the numbers we need to put an end to this and bring the government back to work.
Julie, when someone asks you who is responsible for this shutdown, how do you back up your argument? Obviously, on the Republican side, you'll feel like the Democrats are responsible. They're going to say you're responsible on the other side. How do you back that up when you're talking to people to kind of state your reasons about why you think the Republicans are in a good place? And you're not the only one, obviously. Kevin Cramer said, I've never felt so comfortable that we're in the right as we are on this one. So I assume you share his sentiment on that.
Well, it's as simple as this. For starters, the people who are responsible for shutting it down are the ones who voted against keeping it open. And that's the Democrats in the Senate. And all the House, except for one, also voted against keeping it open. But most, I think, Americans, too many, forget that in the Senate, you have to have 60 votes. And so there aren't 60 Republicans to vote and pass things without Democrat help. And so you've got to have a bipartisan effort. And for whatever reason, which stumps me, because these same Democrats voted for the same funding levels in March, and they essentially, we provided continuing resolutions 13 times under President Biden. So this is not an unusual thing that happens, unfortunately. We've got to fix that. But right now we're in this situation. We had a very simple solution. There was no additional spending or asks added to the continuing resolution. It was clean. Just extend the funding as it is today. And the Democrats voted against it, so they're responsible for shutting it down.
There is another deadline looming here a few weeks out from now, I saw in something I was reading the other day. So it feels like we're kind of in this spot where we might get something figured out, and then we're going to have to tackle this all again coming up a little bit down the road. Am I reading this right?
So if we get this passed, the government funding extends to November 21st. And so we are on the clock to finish all of the appropriations process and bills by then. The leadership in both the House and the Senate feel comfortable that we can do that. We're well on the way. We've made more progress to that end than has been made in many, many years. And so both the leaders feel that we can finish the appropriations process in the regular order by November 21st. And that would be the first time in, I think several decades that we'd would have passed all of the appropriations measures in the regular order. So it's a great step in the right direction, and that's why we're pushing so hard for this continuing resolution, because we think we can have a really strong appropriations process completed this year.
When you take a look at the issue behind or issues behind this shutdown, it seems like even some of the big media that we make so much fun of here on this program, the CNNs and the NBC Newses of the world, even their reporting basically calls out the Democrats for their concern. Their big concern is restoring this funding for Medicaid and healthcare funding for illegals. And there's some talk, some of it is about the Affordable Care Act and extending Obamacare, but there's nobody who really seems to be arguing that one of the big fights for the Democrats is funding healthcare for illegals. And I just wonder if people know what that sounds like to a reasonable swath of America. Certainly, if you're on the far left, you probably think this is a good idea. But there's no way that most of America wants their tax dollars going to fund health care for illegals. So that being said, how does that strike you in terms of what you're going to fight for and how willing you're going to be to have those conversations when they are putting some things out there that they want to accomplish that just don't seem to make any sense to anybody?
Well, I put it simply, I'm not willing to compromise on common sense. And we should not be providing health care for illegal immigrants. We don't want to do anything to incentivize more people to enter our country illegally. And when you provide benefits like that, it most certainly provides that kind of an incentive. So we worked very hard during the discussions of the reconciliation package, the one big, beautiful bill that we are calling the Working Families Tax Cuts Plan. We worked hard to close the loophole that existed in federal law that allowed states to use federal matching dollars to provide health care to illegal immigrants. States like California and New York were doing that. We closed that loophole, And part of the Democrats' demands right now, in terms of their $1.5 trillion worth of demands to reopen the government, includes reopening that loophole. And actually, all of the health care reforms that we included in the Working Families Tax Cuts Plan, they repeal all of them in their $1.5 trillion request for reopening the government. It's just not common sense. Like you said, Americans don't support it. It puts our country on the wrong path, and we aren't going to compromise there.
I saw that last week you put out a statement from your office in D.C. about calling on President Trump to do what he can to help our nation's soybean farmers, and certainly we have many of those in North Dakota as well. And over the weekend, I saw more kind of calls for that, and then I heard that Scott Bessent over the weekend said that the public can expect news of what he called substantial support for our farmers, especially the soybean farmers, as soon as Tuesday. My question for you, Congresswoman, is when you have some legislation that's cooking like that, or you get wind that the president is planning to do something, is that sort of a prompt or a request for members of Congress to put out statements like you made as well? Is that coordinated with the White House in any way?
Well, actually, no, it isn't. That letter that we've been working on was the result of probably a month's worth of discussions that we'd been having going back even before President Trump talked about this or the Treasury Secretary. So we've been working with our soybean farmers and talking to them about, you know, two things. First of all, the real solution is getting the trade deals done and opening up the China market and other markets so they can sell their product like they want to. But I talked to them quite honestly, like, if that doesn't happen, what do we need to do? And that's where we started to talk about, you know, as some sort of a temporary assistance program or relief program, market facilitation grants or the like, to help them with their cash flow this year and to cover some of their operating debt and move in a stronger way for next planting season. So that's really what was, you know, culminated in that letter that got sent out to President Trump and on Friday or Monday. Gosh, I'm losing track.
Yeah,
of time.
No, it all runs together, right? When the busy days go one after the next. I had a chance to visit with you briefly in a forum that the chamber put on here. I believe that was a couple weeks ago now, but recently. And I asked you a question that I have been asking to any member of Congress when I can, as I try to stand up for some of my colleagues who run businesses in our rural communities that are not farmers, but they are definitely affected. You know, the cafes, the coffee shops, the car dealers, the Cenex stores, the even in the metro area, the people that sell goods to people in the farm community, things are hard for them too. And we talked, I'd asked you if you were willing to get behind doing something where you can at least let some of those business owners consolidate debt at a lower cost, maybe through SBA or something like that. And you said there might be an opportunity to do that. Have you heard any more conversation about that coming from Washington, D.C., about how to support our small business owners across the country?
I really haven't, in terms of that particular approach, you know, consolidating debt, trying to have like interest buy down program, that type of thing. I know the SBA does have a number of programs like that already. But again, going back to some fundamentals that you and I have talked about in the past, the most important thing we need to do for all of our businesses is to have the right legal, tax, and regulatory climate across the board in our country. And we worked hard in the Working Families Tax Cut Plan to do that, lowering rates, extending the 199A pass-through program for small businesses where they can deduct 20% of their income if they file their taxes under their personal income taxes. They can deduct 20% of their business income for that, so that they kind of have a equal playing field with corporate tax policy, providing tax credits for investments in capital expenses, research and development, which maybe a lot of small businesses don't invest in, but there are a lot of North Dakota businesses that do. So rolling back regulations, those are a high cost of business, helping with workforce, you know. So I think there are a number of just the fundamentals that we can still work to get right to really create a good, strong business environment for our business owners throughout North Dakota.
Last question for you, Congresswoman, and again, thank you for taking time today. There are a couple of cities across the country, Chicago and Portland, who are suing basically to stop President Trump from sending National Guard troops to their cities. It's interesting that cities like Washington, D.C. and Memphis have been more welcoming, and then cities like Portland and Chicago have been very resistant to that. What about safe cities do they not like? Or do you think that this is just, does it all come down to politics? Because it seems like Donald Trump is saying, I want to make your city safe. And they go, no, heck no, we're not going to put up with safe cities, Donald Trump. Get out of here. It's just interesting to me that we get opposition to that.
I agree with you, Steve. And I think the answer is so simple to them. If they don't want support from the federal government, then take care of the problem yourself. Do the work. Enforce your laws, embolden your police to do their jobs, support law enforcement, don't defund them, help them support, you know, law and order in your communities, enforce the laws that are on the books. It's as simple as that. You wouldn't have the problems if you were doing that.
It's not
and,
hard.
And, you know, citizens ought to demand it themselves. And quite honestly, President Trump trying to support the ICE officials and the workers for that, the ICE agents who are out there who are being demonized and attacked, it's just not appropriate, and that has to stop.
Julie, I've got one more question just came in from the text line here, and apparently it broke about a half an hour ago, and I've not verified this independently. I just saw this, but the texter said, would you ask Julie about President Trump considering a pardon of Ghislaine Maxwell? It broke a half hour ago. Have you heard about this?
I have not heard at all about it, so I wouldn't really be able to comment, other than I would hope that he would be very judicious in his pardons.
Yeah, certainly when it comes to what all is involved with that story. Yeah, no question about it.
Yeah.
Yep, no, we get it. Apparently it's something that's just kind of hitting right now, so I understand that. Thanks a lot for taking the time, Julie. As always, great to visit with you again, and thanks for fighting the good fight out there in D.C.,
You too, Steve. Thank you.
All right, take care. Thanks very much. Congresswoman Julie Fedorchuk joining us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we come back, the Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library is drawing suspicions for tapping a credit line. Some are saying that might mean there's a big problem already with the library and it's not even built yet. I'm not so sure that that's true. We'll dig into this when we come back. The Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library, reports the Bismarck Tribune, has tapped into $53 million of a $70 million line of credit to pay for construction costs while private fundraising continues. The credit line is authorized for up to $70 million, and they have now tapped into $53 million of it. Ed O'Keefe, the CEO of the Library Foundation, say they believe that by the end of the year they will need to tap into all $70 million of that. This is a line of credit. It's not a loan. You take it out and only pay interest if you're using it. Of course, like just kind of your home equity line or any other line of credit. O'Keefe says the dollars are needed because construction costs are coming in while some donations have yet to be collected. Some donations, for example, could be $1 million, but they're going to pay for it in four installments of, say, $250,000. The line of credit is required to be repaid plus interest, and there's not a payment due until June 30th of 2027. The business development director for the Bank of North Dakota is Kevin Hewlett, and he says, hopefully they can pay the entire line of credit back. If they can't, then we'll look at some kind of a repayment structure over the course of a couple of years as their donations come in, then repay it back. I don't know that I feel like this is a five-alarm fire. I think people have been slow to make donations. We know that recently. Time will tell. We'll keep our eyes on it. Top 5 at 5 coming up next. Hour number 2, the Steve Ahlstrom Show on this glorious Monday afternoon. Beautiful fall day. Thanks for sharing it with me. We are here coming to you live from the Drive with Vision Studio, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. 15 minutes to buy a car. They make it easy. They make it very simple. No question about that. And we hope to make things simple here for the next hour or so, breaking down the world around us, giving you the information, the data points that will help you make sense of your world. I got a email earlier today from someone who said, Steve, I heard a lot in the few days after President Trump brought in the National Guard to D.C. about no murders in the city, and just was curious, is that something that is still continuing? And I said, you know, it's a great question, because we heard right those first couple of weeks there was like no murders in the city, and everybody was looking at the same set of numbers, and it was looking great. There was not really any debate about that. So I just did a search. I used the Grok tool, the AI search tool on Twitter or X now, to try to come up with this. And I said, what do we have going on here? And in the 30 days after President Trump dispatched the National Guard, which happened on August 11th, so in those 30 days, there were 7 murders, reports a Washington, D.C. TV station, which polled city data. So there were none in what there was like the first, what was it, like almost 20 days, I think. But there were then 7 murders, apparently, at some point after that, between then and September 11th. So there was a brief streak, it said, on this TV news report. But then there was one more on the 26th, and apparently a few more after that. There were 111 homicides. There have been 111 homicides for the entire year. So the pace, even with, you know, 7 in that 30-day period, the numbers are all down. And I did look at that TV news report where they went through a bunch of different categories, and everything is down. So you can't say it didn't do something. Like violent crime in the month before versus the 30 days after the National Guard went in, violent crime went from 207 to 172. Property crime, 2011 to 1809. Homicides, 9 to 7. Assault with a dangerous weapon, 91 to 75. Robbery, 105 to 81. Motor vehicle theft, 381 to 247. So pretty much every category saw something good happen. Now, it's not reasonable to expect the crime is going to completely disappear. But boy, those 30 days, at least the first couple weeks, what a great thing to have had, you know, just such a, I guess I wouldn't say if it was a calm, because I don't know, having not been there, but we've heard that from a number of people that we've had on the program that do business out in D.C. or are congresswomen, senators, and so forth. So I did want to fill you in on that, because it is good to go back and revisit those things. How did it really go after kind of the initial splash? So overall, pretty good. Progress, at least, right? And yet they don't want this in Chicago. They don't want this in Portland. I don't know what to tell you. It is time now for the Top 5 at 5, and it's brought to you every day at this time, and we bring you 5 stories that I believe are consequential, that are more than just somebody had a one-car rollover, somebody, stabbed somebody with a knife, unless it's a particularly unusual case, but stories you just go, okay, fine. I like stories that kind of help give us a picture of who we are, what we're about, how we're spending our money, trends in society, things like that. So I will give you 5 stories that I believe are the most consequential in that vein today. It's brought to you today by Delta Design and Construction. If you are, hang on, let me cough here a sec. All right, we're back. If you are thinking about doing a construction project to your home, you may want to think about building up. It preserves yard space, saves you money because you're not doing all that foundation work, improved views, more light in your home, increased privacy as well, higher resale value, increased property value. Build up with Delta Design and Construction. Less material, less labor, no moving. Delta Design does it all. Master suites, family rooms, hobby spaces. Fall and winter months are the best time to do it, but schedules are filling fast. DeltaDesign.biz, DeltaDesign.biz, Delta Design and Construction, beauty and quality by design. If you're thinking about it, why would you not at least call them and say, hey, you know, what can you do on this? And I hear a lot of people saying, I want to know the people that are advertising on your station. Those are the people I want to support. Well, then these are the people to call. DeltaDesign.biz, DeltaDesign.biz. Here are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. Story number one. The administration in D.C. is being more and more vocal, putting itself out there a little bit more, that the public will be getting news soon of support for our soybean farmers. This is a big story in our part of the world, certainly across the Midwest, where we grow a lot of soybeans. President Trump is planning, reports NBC News, a significant aid package to U.S. soybean farmers to help them survive China's boycott of American soybeans. Farmers are worried that time is quickly running out to reach a deal of any kind with China to sell any of this year's crop. But Scott Bessent said on CNBC that the public could expect news of substantial support for our farmers, especially the soybean farmers, as soon as Tuesday. So my guess is we're going to get an announcement on Tuesday. Details unknown, but it would come at a time when the world's two largest economies have been unable to reach a trade deal and China has purchased or halted purchases of U.S. beans. They are buying from Brazil, Argentina, places like that. U.S. farmers grow about 4.3 billion bushels of soybeans every year. And last year, the value of that was $60.7 billion. So Trump and Xi are going to meet at the end of October as kind of a breakout session, as they are going to be at the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation Seminar in South Korea. So we'll see. In Trump's first administration, he gave American farmers more than $22 billion in aid payments, and nearly that was in 2019, and nearly $46 billion in 2020. Although the latter included aid related to the COVID pandemic. That was when he was kind of, I think it was corn that he was negotiating with there, and China stopped buying. So there was some aid assistance given there. So expect something maybe coming out tomorrow on that that we can tell you about here on the Steve Alstrom Show tomorrow. The Star Tribune reports that in Chicago, Illinois, and Portland, Oregon, city leaders have gone to court to stop President Trump from sending in National Guard troops. The court proceedings took place this morning in Chicago, and a judge earlier in the day blocked the Guard's deployment in Portland, Oregon. This is, I don't know what you'd want to call it, just a game of chicken, it seems like, between some of these blue cities and Trump's administration. The White House has portrayed these cities as war-ravaged and lawless amid the government's crackdown on illegal immigration. Officials in Illinois and Oregon say military intervention isn't needed and that federal involvement is inflaming the situation. So here's my question. How does federal involvement inflame the situation? If you've got more deterrence out there, that's a good thing. And it shouldn't be inflaming anything. The only way I think that you get inflammation is when you get these local mayors saying, stay out, we don't want you, you're mean, you just want to, you know, crack down on the black and the brown people. That probably inflames it. And the lawsuit today by Chicago alleges that these advances in President Trump's long-declared war on Chicago and Illinois are unlawful and dangerous. I don't know. Feels like there's some war going on in Chicago already. I'm not so sure that this is anything new. That's story number two. Story number three, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has adopted, that's a singular thing, by the way, has adopted recommendations by a new group of vaccine advisors and stopped recommending COVID-19 shots for anyone, leaving the choice up to patients. Well, that's how it should be, right? Let people decide on their own. but the federal government is no longer recommending medical procedures, I guess is maybe another way to say it, or what medicine you should take. The CDC announced early today that it has adopted some recommendations made by some of the advisors, and that they were now going to stop the recommendations. Before this year, health experts recommended annual COVID-19 boosters for all Americans 6 months and older, even though statistically you know about children that they're not really at risk here at all. As the COVID-19 pandemic waned, experts increasingly discussed the possibility of focusing vaccination efforts on people 65 and older, who are among those most at risk for death and hospitalization. But Kennedy, according to Star Tribune, has questioned the safety of COVID-19 vaccines for everybody and abruptly announced in May that they were no longer recommended for healthy children and pregnant women, which makes sense because we now know that there were no field studies or testing done on pregnant women. And healthy children, statistics will tell you, don't really need that. So that is something that the federal government is now officially staying out of. Valley News Live has story number four today. They did a study of all exit interviews from the city of Fargo. And last week, we told you that they brought us the news that things actually look pretty good on the police side of things, that most of the interviews, when they did them, when people left, they were leaving to get a better job. They were having to do a little too much, but it wasn't about management style. Well, today, and I should also say, if we back up a little bit, we also know that the communications department was one that had come under fire by a lot of people. That was several months ago now. So those are the two data points that we had going into today. Well, Valley News Live did a dig on everything else, and among the key findings there were that Fargo Cass Public Health also had some issues that were brought up about management style and communications and so forth. It wasn't just the communications team. But overall, Fargo Fire, the exit interviews were largely positive. And as we told you about, the police kind of found the same thing last week there as well. So a lot with communications, a little with public health, not much with police and fire, I think is how you would summarize the whole thing. And finally, because who doesn't like going to see a good movie once in a while? Well, the 2025 box office is poised to become the highest grossing year in the post-pandemic era, reports CNBC. Fueling this haul are the upcoming releases of Wicked for Good, Zootopia 2, and Avatar Fire and Ash. Momentum from these late 2025 releases are expected to roll over into 2026. Okay, so Zootopia, that's an animated film. I know that. And Wicked is the Broadway show, and there was a movie, Wicked, too. That's an animated one as well. And then Avatar is kind of one of those weird sort of kind of animated but kind of real, maybe like AI-generated, whatever. People just kind of look kind of weird, but they kind of look like people. So apparently these three flicks are going to get us to all flock to the theater. I don't see it myself. I mean, if you got kids, Zootopia, maybe Wicked, I don't know. The Avatar thing looks a little creepy to me. But, I want another Bourne Identity, you know? Give me another Fast and Furious. I don't know how many of them there are. There's a bunch of them, right? I'm a sucker for those darn Fast and Furious movies. I'll be flipping around some night. I'll end up watching that darn thing for whatever's got left. It's just mindless fun. You know, none of it's real. And you know it's going to end okay for Vin Diesel and his people or whatever. So I do like those. But I don't know, you guys. If we're counting on Avatar, Fire, and Ash to help get us, you know, past the days of, you know, the big flicks, the F1 and whatever else we've had, you know, Ford versus Ferrari, I don't know. We need another car movie or another Top Gun or something like that. So, I don't know. There's other stuff out there.
Universal's Black Phone 2, Disney's Predator Badlands, Paramount's Running Man, Universal's Five Nights at Freddy's 2. Freddy, that might be the horror films there. I don't know. Just doesn't do much for me. But anyway, that's what they're saying. All right, 522 Steve Hollister Show. Short break for us. We come back on the other side. Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki. We're going to talk about this tornado being upgraded to an EF5 and why it's drawing a little debate in the meteorology community. That's next. We had a historic tornado roll through part of our territory here back in June, the Enderlin tornado. At the time, we all saw the footage, and it was labeled an EF4 at that time. Well, it's now been upgraded to an EF5. Here to talk about it is Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki. Normally, we hear from Dino from the Skywatch Weather Center at the bottom of the hour, but he joins us for an extra little chat here today. Dean, thanks for giving us a few minutes, my man. When you heard the update today about the tornado being upgraded to an EF5, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, I had a few question marks, like, was there really enough damage? Was one. Now, when you're overturning full grain cars, that is saying something. Mm-hmm. And when you're getting the bark basically stripped off trees, that's saying something as well. Now, I grew up in Plainfield, Illinois, and back in the early 90s, we had an EF5 roar through Plainfield, Illinois. The strongest ever on record for Illinois. And it was similar damage to trees there. Now, this was mostly in open country, but I still had a lot of questions. Was it really an EF5? Well, and I don't want to stoke a fire or a conspiracy theory, and I'm not going to name any names, but a well-respected meteorologist in the U.S. Contacted me today and basically said there was cherry-picked information that no way that this was an EF5. Now, you know, a strong EF4 or an EF5, I think you're kind of splitting hairs. It was still a very strong tornado. Unfortunately, three people lost their lives.
Yeah.
But in terms of it was sad to see that there was cherry picked information, or, and this is coming from somebody very high up in the National Weather Service, that a lot of this information was cherry picked. Unfortunately, let's hope that doesn't really make a big difference in how people look at these EF rankings. But that's the way it appears right now.
So, what seems to be the contention? Are the people that are not sure about this whole thing, that have their doubts, that are skeptics? Is it what is the evidence that they think is being overblown here?
The amount of damage, the amount of, I mean, that, okay, yeah, granted, you're overturning these grain cars that were full. You know, that's a strong EF4. A lot of it was just, I guess the best word is cherry picked. You know, they're using, all right, well, how much did this grain car weigh? You know, were they totally full? And I just think a lot of it was slightly exaggerated, unfortunately. Mm. And, you know, you hate to see that. But when somebody high up in the National Weather Service sends you that information, it's sad. And, you know, I we have a great team at the National Weather Service in Grand Forks, but you know, these higher ups didn't seem to agree. So, kind of leave it at that.
Is there some controversy here or some conspiracy? Like what I'm hearing you say, based on conversations that came to you today, sounds like people rolling their eyes and saying they're grandstanding a little bit. What would the reason be? Like, what incentive would someone have to inflate this up? Like, why do we care?
That's a good question, Steve. And I'm doing some digging on that. Let's just say this isn't the first time this has happened. And I'm doing some more digging. Again, one of my colleagues, and I tried getting a hold of him specifically today, and I'm going to try and get a hold of him. I went to college with him, and he's very, very high up in the National Weather Service out in D.C. So I'm going to pick his brain. I'm going to try and get a hold of him tonight and get his two cents on it. Like, why would this be? You know, who does this benefit?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't seem, because once you lose trust, if you lose trust in your source or your weather forecasters, that's a big shot. I mean, and that's not what we want, you know, because it doesn't look good. So I'm doing some digging, and I'm trying to reach out to my colleague and hopefully hear from him tonight and get some more information on that.
Sure, because I mean, we can have people in any industry that have disagreements about if something was, you know, should be labeled this way or that way.
Yep.
But I seem to hear kind of in your tone that what people are saying is there may be something at stake here. Like it's more than just professional disagreement. Like somebody might be, you know, angling for, like, is there money that comes, like if it's an EF5, does the state of North Dakota get more money from the federal government? Could there be anything in play like that?
That's a good question, and that's what I want to ask my colleague about.
Sure.
Because he would know that working in the government, you know, would there be more funding coming into the local office if that's the case?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very valid question, and that's one of the questions I'll bring up to him. Like, why, you know, this isn't the first time. Why does this keep happening, and who does it benefit? Like you said, is there more money that's going to come in to the local weather service office? Or, and again, we've got a great group of very talented meteorologists up in Grand Forks. So let's hope this is a one-off. But and again, like I said, I'll find out more hopefully tonight when my colleague reaches back out.
Does this have anything to do with, at Hector Airport, I know for a long time I heard from yourself, Daryl Richeson, and others, that it seemed like the temperatures were not aligned with what, like the sensors were off, and because of that we were reflecting higher temperatures. Does any of this have to do with any of that? Is there a tie-in at all to these kind of two sources of contention?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay, two separate deals. Okay,
yeah.
Well, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you want to call it, it was a nasty tornado, no question about that. But
it
interesting
was.
To
and,
hear
and
that
like,
there's some debate on this one.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, unfortunately, three people lost their lives over this. And, you know, we were commenting that or talking that, you know, it's a good thing this didn't hit a more, if this would have hit a more populated area, the devastation would have been incredible.
Yeah.
It really would have.
That video, so I'll never forget the first time I saw that Ring doorbell video from that woman's porch when they showed this big mushroom cloudy looking thing. I'm like, this doesn't even look real. It's like some out of a movie, a special effect. So it was a doozy, no doubt.
Right. I mean, and it was an active severe weather season. The most active we've had here in North Dakota. And again, it was a lot of this was predicted by the LRC. And I know we were talking earlier, this is the first week of the LRC and for the new cycle. And we're looking at above normal temperatures through the weekend. So what we can gather so far is the start of each cycle, we're going to have above normal temperatures for about a week. Now, that doesn't mean 60s and 70s, but, you know, in the middle of winter, if we can get above normal temperatures the start of each cycle, hey, I don't think anybody's going to complain too much about that.
We'll take that. Hey, Dina, before I let you go, I was gone all weekend. Did we end up getting any rain out of that disturbance that was going to move through here over the weekend?
Very, very little. The majority of it fell from, let's say, Bismarck through Jamestown up through Minot, Devil's Lake, and into the northeast corner of the state. So we saw a few sprinkles, but yeah, unfortunately, it wasn't anything appreciable. And we could, I mean, the dry weather is good for harvest. We all know that. But we're at the point right now where we need some precip. The good news is, over the weekend and then next week, we start to turn a little more active. So that'll give us more chances for precip. I'm not seeing one big, huge storm. Our models are trying to indicate there could be one after about the 15th, 17th of the month, that there could be a bigger storm rolling through the northern plains. We'll see how that pans out. But again, this will all factor into the LRC, and by the middle of November here, we'll have a pretty good handle on what the upcoming winter is going to look like.
Okay, sounds good. Dean, thanks for the time. Appreciate the extra effort here today and filling us in on this one today.
You got it, Steve.
The one and only Dean Wysocki, our chief meteorologist here at Flag Family Field Stone Group. We appreciate his time. It's 5:35, time for a check of the news. Have you noticed how many Vision Fords and Lincolns that you're seeing here in the metro? Well, I'm driving one of them. They make buying a car easy. 15 minutes to do the paperwork, and they'll come to you for the sale and when service is needed as well. That's the reason they have 18 service drivers. They got cars going back and forth from Wappington to the metro, left and right. They'll get you to your car to you for the oil changes, service visits, whenever those come up. Drive with Vision, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wappington. Buy your Ford from Ward online at drivewithvision.com. And I'm coming to you from the Drive with Vision studios here each day, thanks to Vision Ford Lincoln. From the text line, Steve, a grain car holds at least 5,500 bushels when filled. It weighs 23,000 pounds when it's empty. And no elevator, only partially fills a car. They pay for the car. Wheat and corn weigh 60 pounds a bushel. All right, so I did a little math, and thank you, friend, for sending that in. So 5,500 bushels, if you got 60-pound test weight corn, is 330,000 pounds. So what is that, 165,000 tons, 165 tons, something like that? And the car itself is 10 tons, so you have about 175 tons of weight there. Now, I don't know. If an EF4 can whip one of those bad boys around, then it could have been an EF4. I just think it's interesting because there seems to be some disagreement on this one. And as you know, I have said from the very beginning that I've been on the air here that I am suspicious on weather data. I think that there are a lot of very good meteorologists out there who are very honest, who are not trying to create weather terrorism, make you scared of the weather all the time, or make weather into unnecessary drama. There is a lot of that, however. And when you have people calling you, hey, tell me about the weather. This is extreme weather we're having. Well, of course, it's like the doctors during COVID. Not all, some. It was kind of fun to be interviewed. It was a big deal. Kind of was nice to be out there, get some attention for what you're doing. You're not going to get attention when you say nothing and say, yeah, it's not that big a deal. Well, I just wonder if there's some of that going on. It took them forever to fix the temperature sensors at Hector Airport. Now, do I think the fix was in? I'm not going to say that, but why did it take so long? And it's maybe just my bias here, but it feels like there are a lot of people in the meteorological community who want to create a reality that weather is killing us for whatever purpose. Maybe they just like the drama, I don't know, but a lot of that feeds into the climate discussion. And if they can convince you that the weather's killing you, then there's no amount of money that you'll be unwilling to pay to fix the weather. And we all know that weather can't be fixed. It is an unprovable theory. It might be true, but it could also be true that the weather just changes sometimes. And we might have stormy patterns, and we might have dry patterns, we might have hot patterns, we might have cold patterns. And we do. So I will always have a little bit of a chip on my shoulder for these stories. And I don't want to put our guys, or sometimes we'll have Daryl Richeson on, I don't want to put them in a position where they got to go after people in their own industry. But Dean himself said there have been times when it seems like Grand Forks National Weather Service has taken a more aggressive view on weather for whatever reason, more warnings, more watches, whatever it might be. So I'm just suspicious. Not saying anything was done wrong here. Not saying this whole thing about the tornado being an EF5 is, but you know, that's going to make its way somewhere into somebody's climate change alarm paper about we've now had, you know, we had our last one 13 years ago. And some, if we get one more, right, that can be rounded up to an EF5, we say, wow, we didn't have one for 13 years. Now we've had two in the last 2 years. These things end up in speeches and white papers and smart people discussions where they all sit around and find some data points that show you that the weather is attacking us.
I'll say this. I do think, it seems to me, if I'm honest about it, that we've had warmer temps maybe the last couple of years. Now, we've had periods, even during this year, spring, August. We didn't have a day over 86 in August, right? That's cool, even though 86 is warm. But I do feel like especially our winters have been warmer, and maybe statistically we've had a little bit more more heat. But are you telling me that we can link that to emissions from this or that? You just can't do it. There's no way you can connect those dots in a serious way and make that happen. So when I see stories like this, I just am going to be a little careful before I say, oh, yeah, it's gotten really bad. And, oh, by the way, if the last 2 years is a sign of things to come for the next 20, I'll take it. I'll take it. A winter's in North Dakota, if it gets a little warmer, I've got no issues with this whatsoever. Now, I wouldn't want to be in Phoenix if it's getting hotter. I get that. But there's a lot more Fargos than there are Phoenixes, at least in our country anyway. So just a couple thoughts to wrap that one up. And thank you, my friend, for the detail there. So you got, whatever, 350,000 pounds of something that got thrown around in the air. Get it. Thanks for the detail on that. Paul in Moorhead wants to talk about this one as well. We welcome him into the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Steve. Yeah, well, you pretty much just said everything a whole lot longer than I would have said, but...
Sorry, you could have made it all shorter for us all. Thank you, Paul.
Well, no, I just got a part of it. I agree with pretty much everything you said there. But for years, I mean, for like 20, 30, 40 years, I've always been a little bit leery of weather people on the TV because it's just human nature. They want to make it a little bit more dramatic as if they can. So they push temperatures, rain amounts, snow amounts, wind, all that stuff right to the maximum that they can find. And if you're watching the weather to find out what the temperature is outside, you got to wait till the very end. They'll show you the feels like temperature when it's cold out, but they won't tell you the actual temperature. Just it's human nature. They're trying to make their life more exciting. So that's all I have to say about that.
All right, Paul. Well, I appreciate you giving a call. And look, I want to be very clear on this. I'm not saying it's every weather person, and I'm not saying that weather should be minimized when it is severe weather and we need to be properly respectful of the weather. Then we need to hear that. But you mentioned something, and for years I had David Muir and ABC World News Tonight on when I was over at Channel 6 doing sports, and we would listen to them do weather. And before I ever even thought about climate change for 2 seconds, I always was I would always remark at how good he was at making you feel like, go, I got to watch this or I got to pay attention to this, because they would the lead to their whole newscast was like, stunning footage as a weather system bears down on millions of Americans under siege tonight. You know, it's like, this isn't just information you're giving us. You are trying to make us feel something to make us stick around, which maybe it's just good business. I don't know. But I do wonder in this day and age where everything is a climate change story, if they are trying to get people to be scared of the weather so that they will give you all their money, because that's what it sure seems like is happening.
It's possible some of them are trying to steer, but mostly I think it's, especially with the local weather people, they're always doing the feels like temperature because it's a little bit more dramatic. Mm. Yeah, and they just, they want to be more interesting. Human nature, stretch it to the limit. I'm not saying they're really exaggerating.
Yeah, I think it's actual data. Yeah, we used to have dew point and wind chill, and now we kind of get the feels like, and I don't know, maybe there's nothing nefarious going on here, but it is interesting. Paul, thank you for giving a call, my friend. I appreciate you chiming in today.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, take care. Thanks, my friend. Did he call me Scott? I guess it wouldn't be the first time that's happened, but Scott's the GOAT. I get all that.
Or maybe I just misheard him. Okay, 550. I want to talk a little Vikings football here after what happened yesterday, but we got one more break to take. If you want to talk about weather, we can do that too, though. 701-271-1100. The coach of the Minnesota Vikings was asked after the game, what happens after the bye week when J.J. McCarthy comes back? Is Carson Wentz still your starter? He couldn't run away from the question fast enough. Carson Wentz might have found himself a new home. Might have. We'll talk about it next. You know, this discussion about the Enderlin tornado makes me think again about making sure that you've got everything covered on the farm. And that's where DJ Coulter and the American Family Insurance Team are so good. You got to make sure you've got enough coverage. Not to say you have to be able to replace every penny of everything, but you got to have some coverage there to rebuild or repair. And DJ Coulter and American Family Insurance, they talk about this, they think about it, and they're going to give you the right advice about the right amount of coverage. They're not out to write every possible dollar of premium they can because they want to keep a good relationship with you. They'll tell you what you need to have, and then you can decide if you want to do more than that. But everybody thinks about their house, they think about their vehicles, but you got to think about those buildings on the farm, the barns, the sheds, all that matters, the silos and all of that. Make sure that you are covered appropriately. DJ Coulter, American Family Insurance, 701-235-6641. Kevin O'Connell, the Vikings head coach, said after yesterday's game, when asked, will Carson Wentz be your starter after the bye week? Assuming when J.J. McCarthy comes back after the bye week that his ankle will be good to go. Most quarterbacks don't miss, you know, 2 months with an injured ankle. O'Connell was vague about it, said, quote, I'm just excited we got the win today. We're going to move forward in this bye and get as healthy as we can at all positions and attack this thing for the next few games. Very much noncommittal. Carson was good yesterday, got hurt early, came back, threw a game-winning touchdown pass with 25 seconds to go, 236 yards and a touchdown against one of the league's best defenses. And the Vikings now, so they beat Cleveland 21-17. So the Vikings are 3-2. There are only four teams, actually five, that have a better record than they do. Philadelphia, Detroit, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, and San Francisco. But none of those teams look to have it all figured out. And this can be an interesting ride for the Vikings. A lot of 2-3, 3-2 teams. So should be some pretty good drama. The schedule is really tough for the Vikings. After this next week where they're off, home to Philadelphia, at the Chargers, at the Lions, home to Baltimore, home to Chicago, at the Packers, and at the Seahawks. That's a tough run. Have a great night, my friend. Keep on flying that flag.